Okay, good morning. Good morning. Ellie, come see me later, okay? Maybe stop by later, okay? Okay. So let's see. Hey, Benson. This is Rabbi Benson Spitzer. Good morning. Good morning, Shai. Okay, so some very interesting Rashis. After Aaron dies, so the Kenanim living in the south attacked the Jewish people. Now we know that the people that had been lodged in the southern flank of Israel were Amalek, historically. And if you remember, the Meraglim reported it. And when the Ma'apilim ascended illegally, they were slaughtered. So all of a sudden, the Kenani come in battle, even though typically Amalek lived there. So Rashi says it wasn't really the Kenanim who were battling. These were Amalekim. This is our old nemesis, our old foe. Rashi says, always looking to take advantage, always looking for the angle. Aaron has died. There's a moral letdown. There's a lack of leadership. This is their chance to exploit. Keep in mind, of course, Amalek is the grandson of Esav, and his role was always to challenge the Bechor and the legacy of Jewish history that Yaakov, in their minds, illegally acquired. We were settlers. We were imperialists. We had taken the rightful historical legacy of Esav. That's why Amalek encounters us when we're first about to enter Eretz Yisrael in Parshas Bishalach. And now it's our second time. We're now entering Eretz Yisrael, so this is their time to step in and try to prevent us. It's not just a wanton or arbitrary war. This is Amalek trying to prevent or to bar the entry of the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. We'll see Edom plays a different role later. So it was really Amalek, but they disguised their speech. They made believe they were speaking Canaanite because they wanted to confuse the Jewish people. And they thought this would be the strategy because they spoke a different language. Perhaps they could conquer the Jewish people. And we'll see next week in Parshas Balak about how language can conquer other people and how Balak and Bilam conspired to employ language in a battlefield that they thought they could not overcome the Jewish people militarily. But it's a very powerful metaphor for people who are really trying to bar and impede the Jewish trajectory, especially as it pertains to Eretz Yisrael, who sometimes try to use different language to disguise their intentions. If Amalek would have come and said, here we are, we're Amalek, we're the children of Esav, and you don't have the right, perhaps the Jewish people would have rallied, would have reminded themselves, would have reminded the world, would have reminded Amalek that after all, we've already been through this battle, we bought it fair and square, Esav forfeited it, your ancestor or your previous kings, Amalek, 40 years ago, tried to stem or to inhibit our entry. So they would have been less successful. But the Amalek people disguise their language, figuratively and metaphorically. We're not here to fight the battle of Amalek versus the Jewish people or Esav versus Yaakov. We're here as Kenanim because you're threatening the local geopolitical balance, because you're threatening stability, because you're a threat to peace, because we're the local residents. So you have to be careful. Today we've been exposed to certain types of threats and assaults about the Jewish people in general and about our presence here in Eretz Yisrael. We don't really dislike Jews, we just dislike Israelis. Or we're not really opposed to the state of Israel, we're just opposed to the imperialist or apartheid tendencies. We'll talk a lot about this next week also in Parshas Balak. Just because people critique us doesn't mean we have to deny them and reject them. Sometimes it's important to receive critique and input to check ourselves. But very often there's a disguising of language when assaulting the Jewish people, Jewish history, Jewish legacy, and in particular our rights to Eretz Yisrael, and it starts in Parshas Chukas, where the Amalekim don't appear as Amalekim, they appear as Kenanim, speaking a Kenani language. Ultimately, it's Amalek coming to maintain that battle against Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we were confused. We didn't know who we were fighting. So, let me find the pasuk. I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to prepare that much. So they started to daven, and Amishal thought that it were Kenanim. And then all of a sudden they saw that even though they looked like Kenanim, because they sounded like Kenanim, because they were speaking Kenanite language, they were dressed like Amalekim. So it was very strange. And their dialect wasn't exactly Kenan, so they were Amalekim speaking Kenan in a strange dialect with different dress. So Amishal were very confused. Who should they daven for? Should they daven that Hashem should help them defeat the Kenanim? Or should they daven that Hashem should help them defeat the Amalekim? And this is in the heat of battle. And they were very, very disoriented. So they made a fateful decision. Amru, they said, Rashi said, Nispal al Stam. We'll just daven. We're not really knowing what we're davening for. Shinamar im nason tike nisa'am hazefi yadi. We'll daven in a nondescript manner. This becomes the first generic tefillah in history. All the tefillahs we've seen until this point are very targeted, particular Moshe's tefillahs. Moshe's davening with a particular endpoint in mind, to forgive the Jewish people, to relax whatever severe penalties you've intended after the Meraglim, after the Egel, to heal Miriam, to help us exit Mitzrayim, to help us cross the Yamsuf. There are many tefillahs until this point, especially in the days of the Avos. But very often life is more confusing. It's not black and white. We don't really know what's afflicting us. We don't really know what we're davening for. Sometimes, for example, just to give you a concrete example of some of the younger people here, some of the older people have experienced it, been exposed to it. Someone is very ill and suffering miserably, and they're undergoing numerous medical procedures. What should you daven for? Should you daven for that person to continue to have successful medical procedures, to be in less pain, and to be able to relieve some of that pain by a different medical scenario and a different conclusion? We have a doctor in the house, so he can share with us some of his moral predicaments. And that's just probably the most glaring and obvious example. Very often in our own lives, we don't know what we need, what we're davening for, what will help us best. Sometimes we have a certain agenda, but we're not sure if that's the appropriate agenda. We say in Berachas HaChodesh once a month, Mali Mishalos Libeinu Latova. We have Mishalos Libeinu. We have ideas that our heart wants, but they may not be Latova, be counterproductive. So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen to our heart, but we're not sure if the musings and the interests of our heart are Latova, so you decide what's Latova. So very often in davening, we have to just let loose and let go, because sometimes we have this control, we're control freaks. We know exactly what we want to program and punch in certain needs and goals and expect Hashem to respond to us in a computer-like fashion based on the specific requests we're lodging of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes you just have to realize we're not even sure what we're davening for. We're just asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. Asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has a better sense and a better sweep. It's a very, very important voice of davening on two levels. Number one, because very often we reach those predicaments. Number two, sometimes in general, even when we're not facing particular predicaments that are confusing, are they Canaan or are they Amalek? Should that person live or should that person die more easily without pain? Sometimes you just have to daven. There's a very famous Rishon called the Rosh Mikinon. He was a French Rishon. He lived in the 13th century, and he has a very famous line that a person should daven like a baby. A person should train himself to daven. Rav Amital would quote that line to us very often. That means that sometimes when you daven with too much calculation and too much thought process and too much predetermined interests, it could come across as pompous and bombastic. It could come across as artificial, rather than creating that authentic sense of helplessness and dependency and looking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a child looks to a mother. So in Hasidus, this became very popular to divest some of the artifice and some of the over calculation in the human convention, and to replace it with a purity that may be more innocent and less directed, and just say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know what I want. I just want to be with you, daven with you, answer some of my concerns. So it's a very important davening, because it resets an entirely different model of tefillah. They don't know what they're davening for. They just know that they're davening. And as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save us in the son titein es ha'am hazeh biyadi. Very often, even today in Eretz Yisrael, we're not sure what we should be davening for. But that doesn't prevent us from davening. That confusion, in some cases, makes it easier to daven. The more confused you are sometimes, the more authentic your davening should be. Turning back a little bit, turn a little forward. The people complain once again, and Hashem sends serpents that sting them or that inject toxins that are very, very infectious, contagious, disabling, the chashim hasrafim. So the people approach Moshe Rabbeinu, and they ask him to daven. Vayispala Moshe be'ad ha'am. Now this sounds very typical, right? It sounds like a constant recycling of failure, betrayal, divine punishment, and Moshe interceding for davening. We've seen this before. We've seen this in Parshas Kitisa. We've seen this in Parshas Baloscha to a degree. We've seen this in Parshas Shlach. To a degree, we've seen this in Parshas Korach as well. So this is the fifth iteration of this story. But there's something different about this story that Rashi notes. This is the first time that the people asked Moshe to daven for them. One of the other instances is betrayal. Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes the people, and Moshe intercedes heroically on behalf of an idea, on behalf of the future of the Jewish people, on behalf of how people will see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lama Yomer HaGoyim. He's not responding to the request of individuals. Now he's responding to people who ask him to daven. Hispalel al Hashem. The last time Moshe did this was in Mitzrayim, where Paro asks him to daven. Now Moshe is responding to the request of the people. Rashi says, "Mikan l'misha mevakshim imenu mechila." If someone asks you for forgiveness, shelo yehei achzarim milim kol. You shouldn't be stingy. You shouldn't be insensitive. You shouldn't be cruel. You should be easygoing. It's called forbearance. I would call it maybe generosity of spirit. I mean, something called generosity of funds. You have money and you want to be generous with it. Something called generosity of time. You have time, which is a resource. How much time do you give to needs and interests that aren't yours? There's a third type of generosity called generosity of spirit. And that's probably the hardest generosity, where your spirit has been hurt or you've been insulted, or can you be generous with your spirit and give your spirit to someone, give your spirit of friendship, your spirit of forbearance, your spirit of forgiveness. So Moshe has generosity of spirit, and Rashi's really highlighting that this is one of the first times, maybe Korach is a little bit close to this, but Korach really is also an assault on Hashem's choices. It's really not about human beings. It's questioning why Hashem makes choices and delivers certain jobs and tasks to people. Obviously, they're attacking Moshe and Aaron, but they're attacking the whole concept of selection, which is why Hashem has to reinforce the concept of selection. But now there's an anger and a bitterness towards Moshe. And Vaydaber ha'am belokim uve Moshe. It's very clear that they're attacking Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe's under fire. And now it's harder for him to be generous to the people who are assailing him. That's the hardest form of generosity to people who are attacking you, who are assailing you, who are subverting you and your interests. So on the one hand, it's a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu's generosity of spirit, that even though he's under fire, really for the first time, maybe the second time, the Meraglim is not about Moshe, the eagles, if anything, it's about over-respect for Moshe Rabbeinu. But here they're assaulting Moshe Rabbeinu. But what's more interesting is not just that this is the first time that Moshe is under assault, because maybe in Korach he's under assault as well, but this is the first time he doesn't have his sidekick Aaron by his side. Aaron has passed. And to a degree, Moshe now has to play the role of Aaron, to a degree. And you see Moshe morphing into a different role. As long as he had Aaron by his side, they played off of each other. Can't call him good cop, bad cop, but they certainly had that tandem, tag team phenomena where Moshe was represented the absolute truth, and Aaron, as Chazal tell us, less in the text, but you can see in the Parshat Ki Tisa, it's more conciliatory, there's an Oyev Shalom and a Rodei Shalom, and you could imagine if anyone would intercede on behalf of the Jewish people, it would have been Aaron echoing. Moshe would have represented the absolute truth, and Aaron would have tried to daven for them. In fact, that Moshe davens before, he's not davening for them based on their request, he's davening ideologically based on the future of the Jewish people. But now Aaron is gone. And to a degree, Moshe has to shift into playing the role of Aaron HaKohen. And it shows us that sometimes in lives, in relationships, we can't be one thing. Sometimes we tag ourselves, this is who I am, this is my identity, this is the type of person I am. And you'll see as you grow older, when you have more complex relationships, you have to be versatile. In this relationship, this is where I'm needed to be in this relationship. I'm needed to be in this context a little bit different. In this situation, I have to play this role. You have to be aware of it. And it takes a while. You're still growing up and becoming emotionally aware. What strengths do you have? What weaknesses do you have? You don't want to be manipulative, God forbid. In this context, I'm going to make believe I'm so-and-so. Those are different personas and different personalities. That's very, very exploitative and dishonest. But in terms of your interactions with other people, sometimes you need to be the leader. Sometimes you need to be the follower. Sometimes you need to be the glue that holds people together. Sometimes you need to be the listener. Sometimes you need to be the speaker. So Moshe Rabbeinu is responding to a very different reality. And this, again, the davening is similar to the other davenings, but the motivation behind the davening and the forgiveness that he extends very freely in his entire role in this story is very, very different than his role in previous stories. Okay, we're out of time. We didn't get a chance to speak about the Rashi of Edom, so I'll have to leave Edom. We spoke about Amalek. So the three Rashis we spoke about are people that attack the Jewish people and our presence in Israel by speaking different languages. Number two, the ability to daven amorphously or nondescriptly. And third of all, the ability, first of all, to be generous with your spirit Second of all, to realize that different circumstances may force you to become not a different person, because that's dishonest, but to accent different parts of your personality and to play a different role in that relationship. Okay, have a good Shabbos, everyone. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, good Shabbos.
Thank you.
You here for Shabbos?
Matanya's having a Shabbos coming for Shabbos.
Oh, everyone's going? Yeah. He's going to invite people for Shabbos, I guess. His own Zach. Are you going to Matanya Shabbaton?
No.
You want to come for lunch?
Sure.
You get rewarded for being left out.
Yeah,
do you guys know each other?
Yeah,
I came to. Oh, you remember Matan from last year? Oh, no, Matan wasn't here. Matan was already in the army.
Matan Goldman. Matan was in Shabbat.
You know Matan Goldman from last year?
Yeah.
This is his brother, Shai Gold.
Yeah. We made a connection.
Rabbi, the way you described Rashi about the candidates made me think a lot about the bracha that Yaakov took from Esav, right? He called Kol Yaakov, your time of day. So, I know Rashi also quoted the brachas a lot in the Edom conversation.
Right, so look at that conversation carefully. Okay, I'll give you a challenge for Shabbos, okay? Are the Jewish people trying to justify why they deserve Eretz Yisrael? Because there's a whole history lesson. They're talking history. When it comes to Moreh, they say we need to fast. When it comes to Adam, they start talking about Mitzrayim and Mashi fills in all these blanks. Are they trying to justify or are they trying to rebuild the partnership? It's not clear. Rashi, even in the text, certainly, the text is much more vague, but in Rashi there are different connotations. Are they looking to say, this is our land and stop trying to prevent? Or are they saying, let's reunite, let bygones be bygones, you have a role, we have a role, let's walk in together. Think about that.